business.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks superfan, back with another Sunday show. We have got a really, really good podcast ahead of us. I am joined by MJ, our Atlanta superfan. What's happening, MJ?
Oh, not too much. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm enjoying my weekend. Looking forward to finally having a Seahawks game. Man, all you guys got to watch games already. I'm still waiting on mine. That's not fair. We also got my good buddy Rob. What's happening, Rob?
I'm doing all right. I'm still kind of shell shocked from the trades that went down after our first game. So just trying to recover and trying to figure out what we got left on our football team.
Yeah, man, we got to talk about the way you guys were shuffling the deck. And James, my Eagle super fan, what's going on, brother?
Not much, but hey, you know, you get new toys in Buffalo, and they already getting injured.
Yeah, I did see that. I was going to bring that up. I'm sure we'll get into that in a second.
Oh, you know James has some opinions on Jordan Matthews, that's for sure. All right. So
lots.
The plan for today, everybody, we're going to talk a little bit about the preseason games for these superfans that have gone on so far. Then we're just going to kind of cover some news because there's a lot of it right now. From a second-round pick kicker being jettisoned to the curse of Pod Vader striking again. This is worse than the Madden curse. To a whole lot of roster changes going on in Buffalo. To the big suspension for Zeke Elliott. So let's get right to it, and we'll start with some of these news items. I want to talk about that Ezekiel Elliott suspension right off the bat. If you haven't heard, he's been suspended 6 games for domestic violence. He was not convicted. He's not going to be tried. But as we have seen, the league does its own investigation and makes its own determination. So let's go and start with you, MJ. How do you feel about this Ezekiel Elliott suspension?
I honestly don't know. Partly because, I don't know, when I look at how the league does their investigations and their punishment, to me, it's kind of a joke. You look at the inconsistency in how they apply punishment to players for different things. If it actually turns out that he did it, I'm wholeheartedly behind it. Suspend him. The league has a pretty bad reputation for, like I said, for punishment against players. So that's kind of where I am right now. Just if he did it, definitely suspend him, punish him. But if he didn't do it, this 6-game suspension before anything has happened, I don't know. I honestly don't know how I feel about that aspect.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. Rob, let me ask you, do you think it's okay for the league to suspend players for conduct that they do not and probably will not get any kind of conviction for?
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of one of those lines, you know, it's a real gray area. I understand that, you know, they have, you know, and it's not like they have random guys. They do have, you know, acts, you know, CIA, things like that, working for them, you know, at the league office, doing these things. But that being said, I mean, if you're not being found guilty, you know, by a jury of your peers, I find it, you know, a little difficult to, I mean, you know, we say 6 games and that's, you know, stinks. But here's how it affects him. He is now like guaranteed money in his contract. Like the Dallas Cowboys don't have, like, that can be gone. So say he tears his ACL in a real bad way. And, you know, the Cowboys don't have any, real guaranteed money to deal with him. And that's terrible for him, you know, and he wasn't found guilty. I do think the suspension is going to be, I'm sure that Ezekiel Elliott is going to appeal. I'm not sure if they've even announced it yet. I know he gets 3 days after it was announced, 3 business days. So I'm guessing that probably won't even be announced that he's appealing to Wednesday. So it'll probably be a 3 or 4 game suspension. I think the 6 just in itself is harsh on purpose to kind of, because they know that they're going to kind of cut a deal and work it to 3 or 4 games. But I don't really like it. I don't like seeing players in general just get, you know, being suspended. Two, I don't like it when it's someone who, it's not like he was found guilty. You know, they cleared him, you know, for whatever reason. You know, it just seems weird for the league to have a tougher stance than, you know, I believe it was just the Columbus, Ohio Police Department. You know, just seems a little weird to me. I don't love it.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the common feeling. Let me ask you, James, and before we get into this, you know, full disclaimer, you are our Eagles super fan. I know you're sitting there, you got the, like, Brian Westbrook poster, and you're wearing your Eagles footy pajamas, and you got your Tony Romo voodoo doll that's worked wonders over the years. But if you can distance yourself from that for just a moment, tell me your thoughts on the punishment, the process, if you think it's fair, unfair. Where are you at on this?
For starters, the process is a joke, just to comment on what MJ was saying earlier. The league is arbitrary in doling out punishment. And ever since Ray Rice's incident, which was caught on video, they've been overtly heavy-handed early and allowing things to be appealed to lesser sentences later, if that, with the exception of Ray Rice, of course. Specifically on Ezekiel Elliott, I'm not surprised he got 6 games because of the conduct detrimental to the league that has been going on since he's been in the league. Starting with last year, St. Patrick's Day, where he ripped a girl's top off, to the incident where he was somehow around, if not involved, in a bar fight, and then speeding. I believe he was 80 in a 45 on the city street. So these things, on top of the investigation that didn't go anywhere with the sexual harassment or sexual assault from when he was in college, doesn't bode well for the league's, quote, image. And the league's image is also a joke. We'll get to that later. But just sticking with Elliott right now, is pretty much the same thing that Ben Roethlisberger got a couple of years ago, I believe, after they lost to the Packers in the Super Bowl, when his two charges of sexual assault came back on him, and he initially got 6 games, which was appealed down to 4. So will Ezekiel Elliott, as far as I know, has already appealed this. I believe the appeal came out later on Friday evening that they said they were going to go forward with the appeal. Will this be reduced from 6 games? Yes. Unfortunately, it doesn't affect my team because the Eagles don't play the Cowboys until the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And if the 6 games stand, then he'll virtually miss the first half of the season. But looking at this from the outside, it's too many knuckleheaded incidences back to back to back to back to back with almost no reprieve of, say, a year of good behavior in between anything. You look at Lucky Whitehead, he had the same thing. The only difference is here you have your all-pro star running back, and with Lucky Whitehead, you've got your fifth-string wide receiver who barely plays special teams. So, yeah, there's going to be a case made for keeping Ezekiel Elliott around as opposed to Lucky Whitehead, but it's the same issue. You know, Dallas distanced themselves, and even though it came out that the last offense against Lucky Whitehead was mistaken identity, and even the cops came out the very next day and said, hey, we got the wrong guy, you know, it wasn't Lucky Whitehead. We got a guy who stole his identity. Dallas still stood pat and was like, oh, no. Lucky's got to go because his conduct is detrimental to the team. Well, you can't have it both ways and say his conduct was detrimental to the team, even though the last offense wasn't even him because he was nowhere near Virginia when that thing took place. And here you have Ezekiel Elliott, and now you're upset. So, I mean, don't throw stones in glass houses and all that, but you know, the hypocrisy around the league is rampant, and this is just another case of it.
I love the way that you still managed to tie in where that the Cowboys suck in that assessment. That's exactly what we wanted from you. Yeah, I mean, the way I feel about it is, like, I don't think the league is obligated to wait for some kind of conviction. I think if they conduct an investigation and it's a good one, and I don't know how good their investigation is, but if it seems pretty certain that something's the case, I'm all for them serving a suspension. But like you guys say, that inconsistency to me is what makes it hard. Look at somebody like Josh Brown, who has been had multiple domestic assault calls on him. There's something like, I think, 20 incidents reported involving him, or like confessed to 20 incidences, and he gets suspended for 1 game. And then you have this with Ezekiel Elliott, which is this one situation plus some, you know, iffy behavior, let's put it that way, and he gets 6 games, that to me is preposterous. Like, that's absolutely ridiculous. Like, if you're going to be heavy-handed and you're just going to say, if there's smoke, there's fire, then we're going to drop the hammer on you, then you need to do that across the board. The way that they're doing it now, where it's like, okay, here's a game, then here's 6 games, oh, but we pulled it down to 2, oh, but now here's a tape, so we're going to ban you from the entire league, even though the tape just confirms what the reports were. It's ridiculous. I try and be not cynical, but it's hard not to be cynical when you pay a lot of attention to that stuff.
True, Justin. But if it was just a domestic assault case from Columbus, Ohio, if it was just that, then yes, 6 games would definitely be overhanded. But again, it's everything else that's happened since he's been in the league. So if he hadn't pulled the girl's shirt down, if he wasn't speeding, if he was nowhere near the bar fight, you know, the week before after he was caught speeding, then yeah, 6 games would be overhanded and we'd probably looking at a 1 or 2 game suspension. He pretty much did this to himself. So I mean, I get where you're coming from. If it really was just a domestic violence, 1 or 2 games, fine. The police didn't find anything, but the league still thinks they have to do something, 1 or 2 games, perfectly okay with that. But at the same token, I'm still perfectly okay with this because of everything else he's done since he's been in the league. So now he falls under the NFL's jurisdiction as far as doing what they feel like they have to do.
If nothing else, his knucklehead status is pretty well confirmed at this point. All right.
Indeed.
Definitely. Definitely.
Next bits of news. Rob, I'm going to start with you. Sammy Watkins, no longer a Bill. Jordan Matthews is a Bill now. Why don't you walk us through the trades, what you feel about the trades? Because as far as I can tell, we just like took your team, like shook it up with a couple other teams and saw what came out.
Yeah, that was quite the shock, especially after the preseason, the first preseason game. They were throwing the ball left and right to Watkins. Apparently, it was because they were auditioning him, which you didn't really expect. But I feel like you can't make one trade without the other, and I feel like the Buffalo Bills, they haven't made the playoffs in a long time. I don't know if you guys are aware. Everyone in Buffalo definitely is. They haven't made the playoffs in 17 years. The problem with that is that every time they bring on a GM or a new coach or things like that, they feel they need to speed everything up to kind of break that, break the drought. That's kind of what's happened over the past probably 6 or 7 years. So I like what they did hear from the respect that they clearly are saying, we're not going to be mediocre, we're going to be bad, but then we're going to be good because we have tons of draft picks. The Bills have a ton of draft capital right now. They have 2 firsts, 2 seconds, 2 thirds. After the compensatory picks come out and the Bills, they need to release a couple kind of backup guys that they signed early in the process to make this happen, but they can get a 3rd and a 4th round pick based on the compensatory schedule. Looking at the trades, it hurts to trade someone as good as Sammy Watkins. That being said, he's been on the injury report 10 times, I believe, over the past 3 seasons, or 10 different things over the past 3 seasons. He is not a durable NFL football player, or at least he hasn't proved himself to be yet. The guy that they got in that trade, is a guy by the name of E.J. Gaines. E.J. Gaines is a cornerback who is going to fit in well in Buffalo because Buffalo is going to play that kind of cover 2, cover 3, which I know, Justin, you'll be familiar with the cover 3. I'm pretty certain that's what Seattle plays quite a bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Kind of a cover 3 yeah. Shell.
Yeah, so they're going to put – I mean, that's kind of what they're going for. So, they make the deal. They also get a 2nd round pick. That 2nd round pick, it might be an early pick. I think after these trades, I think the Bills may have next year for the first 40 picks. And then the other trade, Ronald Darby, who is our number 1 corner. He's played great in Buffalo. A little bit more of a man corner, though. So I feel like the team felt that maybe he didn't fit what they were trying to do as well. Trade him to Philadelphia, where, by the way, I think he's going to fit in phenomenally. His rookie year, The defensive coordinator for Philly, Jim Schwartz, you know, was the DC in Buffalo. And that was his, you know, his best season that he's had so far, was then. The Bills get a third round pick from them. They also get Jordan Matthews. One of the things that you saw kind of on like Twitter and things like that, that Jordan Matthews was more durable. Funny they mentioned that today. Jordan Matthews was pulled from practice with a chest injury, and he's currently having an MRI. But, you know, that's life being a Bills fan. So we'll see how these go. Both guys, E.J. Gaines and Jordan Matthews, I feel like were throw-ins to a certain degree. I think the Bills were more looking for the draft picks. Both guys also are unrestricted free agents at the end of the season, which means that I think the Bills' new GM likes to play the compensatory pick game and may see potential opportunities with that. If there was one player of the two that I think the Bills could re-sign at the end, you know, before next year, I actually think it would be E.J. Gaines. But that being said, I don't necessarily think either of them will. I think both of them will play fairly well for Buffalo, and they will both sign with other teams next year, and the Bills will look forward to getting those compensatory picks.
Now, as far as an immediate on-the-field change, at least offensively, you're basically going from Sammy Watkins to Jordan Matthews, right? Yes, I know there's a defensively sub-changing, there's some picks involved. So, James, since we've got you on here, you know Jordan Matthews better than anybody else on this podcast. What is he getting in Jordan Matthews?
Well, I definitely say keep him in the slot. We tried to play him, or at least groom him to be an outside wide receiver going into last season, first year under Doug Peterson, our West Coast scheme. It did not work out well in training camp. We had to resign him to the slot. He is definitely a good deep threat. He's big. He's tall. Definitely has the speed to get downfield quickly. Can open things up over the middle. He is reliable, which was what was confusing when all the reports came out from before our first preseason game this past Thursday that Nelson Aguilar was pushing him in practice, which didn't really make sense to me until they said that, you know, Aguilar has been eating up the corners in practice, but our corners really aren't that good, and we also have rookies supplanting whatever veterans we have there. So while I'm happy we get Darby to reunite him with, you know, his former DC from Buffalo, now in Philadelphia, I think he'll excel well there. That'll give us a boost defensively. Offensively, from what I saw in the preseason game against Green Bay on Thursday night, he caught two passes, beat man coverage fairly well, but, you know, Green Bay secondary really isn't stable either. They're, you know, still have a lot of guys coming off of injury, and most of the big-name DBs didn't play that night. So the two passes he caught, he did look good on. One was an out route, and one was a crossing route. So definitely hit on the numbers, catch the ball in stride very well. Buffalo is going to be very happy to have him. But again, I don't know if they're going to transition him to the number one spot or leave him in the slot. I will say buyer's remorse if they put him outside, because production may dip a little bit than what he's been used to. If he's healthy, I say keep him in the slot.
There you go. So next, I want to talk a little bit about kickers. I'm going to start with you, MJ. I think that, you know, there in Atlanta, you got one of the best kickers in the NFL in Matt Bryant. Mm-hmm. Would you – let's go back in time. Would you have been willing to spend a second-round pick on him?
Yes.
The reason why I ask that question is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did just that last year with Robert Aguayo. He was the most, I think, that had the highest kicking percentage in college football history. So he definitely has some acclaim behind him. I was highly, highly critical of that move, mainly because of the value of that position. Mm-hmm. But he was a dumpster fire last year, and he's been cut. After 1 year, a kicker you invested a second-round pick in is gone. Now, obviously, you guys aren't in a position to do that. But do you have any thoughts on the matter? Is, like, I don't know. To me, that still seems like just in hindsight too much to spend on any kicker whatsoever. But if you're going to spend that kind of draft capital, it feels crazy to me to move on after 1 year.
If we were to spend that kind of draft capital, I'm with you. I would not move on after 1 year. However, the reason I say I would spend a second round draft pick on a kicker is if you look at a lot of the Falcons, even just looking at our divisional games, they've been close. They've been decided by a field goal or a touchdown. And some of those close games, I don't want to have to worry. I don't want to wonder if my kicker can kick a 52-yarder to win me the game and make the difference between winning the divisional playoff and not winning it and have to listen to Saints fans give me crap. So yes, I say spend the second round draft pick, get a damn good kicker, somebody who can get you those close games. And those games that aren't exactly close, that kicker can be the difference between pushing me ahead by one score where they may potentially score and tie, or putting me up by a touchdown and a field goal, which still gives me the win.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. That's definitely a very impactful position. But, you know, I know that, you know, my team got, I don't know, my last three kickers just had free agency. It seems like, you know, there's a lot of guys out there for, you know, cheap or free that you can pick up. Rob, do you recall how the Bills came by their current kicker?
Their current kicker, yes, I do. They signed him as a free agent. It's a guy that I'm sure you know this since you're throwing me the question. He came by way of Seattle for a 3-year contract worth about $3.5 million a year. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it costs you no draft capital. And Stephen Hauschka came to the Seahawks as a free agent. And at least for his first few years with the team, he was excellent. On the flip side, you know, we go and we pick up the kid from the Vikings who they spent a draft pick on, who they let go because he struggled. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it might deserve more research, but at least to my observation, and James, let me know your thoughts on this, but it seems like kickers, you know, your odds of success on the free agent market are as good or better than picking somebody up in the draft.
If you're going to get a kicker and you want one fresh out of college, I say scout more than, say, a handful of kickers and sign one as a rookie free agent. Our last two kickers in Philadelphia, I believe, came of that way. Aguayo, actually, side note real quick, hasn't been off the market that long. The Bears just claimed him today.
Ooh, breaking news.
Nice.
Sturgis and Parkey, our last two kickers, were by way of rookie free agent. We didn't spend draft picks on them. As a matter of fact, I think David Akers was the last kicker we spent the draft pick on, and he may have been fifth, sixth, seventh roundish draft pick, if I recall correctly. I may be wrong in that, but I know it wasn't a high pick. Unless your guy that you really want is Sebastian Janikowski,
I
see no reason reaching on a kicker. And that's not just to disparage kickers. But if you're going to invest, actually do your homework on kickers, bring these guys in. A lot of these guys can be coached up. And, yeah, giving Aguayo only one season in Tampa and then cutting him is ridiculous because you've thrown away a draft pick, literally. You've thrown away money because, I mean, under the rookie scale, he's still guaranteed something. And you just let him – I mean, for him, probably cool. You let him hit the market early so he doesn't – you know, whatever the wage scale is or whatever, probably won't apply now since he's a free agent after 1 year, so he's not stuck under the previous contract per se. But your special teams coach has got to do something. I mean, what is his job if not to get this guy to do better throughout the year? It's not just punt and kick coverage. It's you have to coach your kickers up. That's part of special teams. And, yeah, he was – a grand adventure last year, especially that Monday night game against Carolina that he miraculously finally put one through at the end. But I mean, coaches get paid to coach up players. And again, if your only job Monday through Friday is special teams and you see your kicker struggling, maybe you should be the one getting fired, not the kicker.
Yeah. I suppose that's a fair point. Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about curses. Everybody knows about the Madden curse. That's probably the most famous one. But there is one curse in the NFL which is more proven, more impactful and more devastating. And that is the curse of Pod Vader. Look no further than the 2017 Jacksonville Jaguars. His current boyfriend, who, like all of his previous boyfriends, are having all sorts of issues. That sentence is a little bit weird out of context. So, just in the last few days, Brandon Albert, who they traded for, left tackle, has retired. Marquise Lee was carted off the field. Leonard Fournette, who has a history of foot and ankle issues, is sidelined with a foot issue already. Rob, if the intrepid Pod Vader calls you up and says, you know what, I really like your Bills this year, what is your reaction going to be?
If he calls me up and tells me that, I'm going to hang up on him and I'm going to quit being a super fan.
Right? Oh, my God. Oh,
so,
man.
I think that, and all joking aside, I think that what this really is also being a Bills fan, of, you know, a little better. I don't know if you remember, their current coach, Doug Marrone, left the Bills on an obscure $4 million out that he could have if they changed ownership while he was a coach. And then he ended up, you know, going around the league, and he's ended up as the coach of Jacksonville. So I say it's just karma to Doug Marrone, quite frankly. But man, this is tough. They have not had good luck this year. And it's a team that you'd think, with the talent they have on defense, you know, the players that they've signed in free agency, the early draft picks year after year, you'd think this would be the year that, you know, maybe they could turn it around, but man, maybe not.
MJ, are the Jaguars the unluckiest team in the NFL so far this year? Is anybody else potentially in the running for that title so far?
I'd have to say no. I don't see anybody else in the running for that. Actually, no, I take that back. If something were to happen to knock my Falcons out, then we'd be in the run for that. But right now, no, it's definitely Jacksonville.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude. What about you, James? Can you think of any other team that is just, like, fate has decided just to dump on them, like the Jaguars so far?
The Colts, team in their own division. Andrew Luck still haven't been on the field yet. They still have no sound defensive presence. The offensive line is still in shambles. The front office is in disarray. The coach doesn't know if he's going to be back next year. So, yeah. I'd go with the Colts right now. But the Jaguars, definitely feeling it. I will say Brandon Albert, after they, I guess, fixed his retirement, they end up cutting him on Saturday. So there's that.
All right, so maybe there's kind of, I don't know, financial relief or something to work that out. Yeah. Okay,
they did something.
So what's worse? Having Andrew Luck with uncertainty about being available week one, or being certain that Blake Bortles is your quarterback this year?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
I feel like within, ooh, it's also karma to a certain degree, because the owner of the team has definitely on more than one occasion gotten drunk and gone on Twitter and posted selfies of himself without a shirt on. So.
That's
for the imagery.
It's us who were cursed after that. Yeah. And Ryan, our Jaguars super fan, I'm sorry. It's not my fault. It's Jay's. You can thank him for this. Oh, man. Poor guy. All right.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. Now that this lingering cloud of this curse has faded, let's talk a little bit about our teams. My team hasn't played yet this preseason, so I don't have any insight to offer outside of the previews, which if you didn't listen to, you should have listened to those last Thursday. We're going to be doing our previews pretty consistently on Thursdays. Once the season starts up, we'll go back to our normal Sunday recaps as well. So let's go ahead and start with you, James. What have you seen out of your Eagles so far this preseason?
First game, Green Bay. Offense looks good. Mac Hollins, wide receiver, rookie out of North Carolina. Had a 38-yard catch and run, mostly on a 20 or so yard run after the catch. Poor tackling by, again, Green Bay secondary. But he looked good. Again, Carson Wentz looked amazing on the first series, 4 for 4. Matthews, who's no longer with us, caught two of those four passes. So, I mean, that's disheartening because I don't know what his chemistry is going to be with everybody else going forward. Second units need work. Definitely our reserves need work. I can't really gauge the starting defense because Aaron Rodgers didn't play. The front seven looked good against the run whenever Green Bay decided to run the ball. They still look like they're going to be a run-and-gun offense with very little run. Other than that, I'm looking forward to the new additions offensively. Blunt looked good. Smallwood didn't play. And, you know, I'd like to say more about the wide receivers, but again, starters got the first series and hit the bench. Right now, things look good. Halapulivati Vaitai, if he can stay healthy, will be a nice successor to Jason Peters if and when he does retire in a couple of years. Looking forward to a very modest season, at worst 7-9 like we did last year. At best, who knows? But both sides of the ball, I'm reserving judgment right now.
Now, you mentioned that Carson Wentz is looking really good. I'm very high on Carson Wentz. Do you feel like he's the next Derek Carr, or is he the next Blaine Gabbert, right? And I'm sure your answer is a little bit biased, but like, does he look like he's taking steps forward in the second year?
He does. He's not waiting. The first year, you know, we trade Sam Bradford to Minnesota 8 days before the start of the season. He's basically told he's going to be the starter. And he's trying to cram a book into his brain with very little rep because he only played one preseason game last year before he caught a chest injury. This year he's had the entire offseason to work. And while we've been cautious with Alshon Jeffery, who I would have liked to see play, but I understand first preseason game, the main people aren't going to play that much. That's something I'm looking forward to in the second game when they play, say, the first quarter and seeing the offense click with pretty much all the default starters out there offensively and how his chemistry with Jeffery was worked in real game-time decisions, not just out in practice. Because the reports out of campus, they look phenomenal in practice, but I'm not concerned with practice. You know, I need to see these reps live against, you know, viable defenses in the league. And I'm not going to say he's taking this giant leap forward, but Carson Wentz is on the path to being a stable and solid NFL quarterback, Hall of Fame worthy and all the other good stuff. We can talk about that 5-6 years from now, but right now he's still a young quarterback, second year, and he's taking the necessary second step forward.
All right, I want to turn attention over to you, MJ. In my experience, and this comes from personal experience, an offseason following a heartbreaking Super Bowl loss to the Patriots sucks, and there is nothing you are more eager about than the start of football. And now that we've got the first week of preseason under our belt, how are you feeling about your Falcons so far?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. The run game I was actually pretty impressed with, specifically Teron Ward. He looked really good out there. I like the cuts that he made when he got the ball in his hands, and he looks like he'll be a good, solid back. He also, the downside I see is if I put him next to Freeman, I can't really give you anything that demonstratively sets the two of them apart. Their running styles are a lot alike. I don't know how well he can catch the ball in the flat. That still remains to be seen. So that'll be interesting. I have a feeling he'll make a solid third back, but it'll just be interesting how that pans out, considering we've got we don't have an every down back. Depending on what the situation is, will show you which back gets in for that game. The one thing I wasn't a fan of with this game was watching the secondary. I saw some mistakes from the secondary that I've seen in the past, but again, this is preseason and these are guys out there trying to fight for their spot. So it worries me a little bit, but I'm not going to say I'm overly worried because, like I said, these are guys trying to fight for their spot. Now that we've got Trufant back this year, he'll be healthy. He'll be a good addition to have back on the field, and I think we'll do fine.
All right, let me ask you that. How do you feel about Desmond Trufant? Now, your predecessor as the Falcons fan absolutely adored him. If it were possible, he somehow would have carried his child. He loved him so much. as a, you know, Seattle guy, UW guy, I think Desmond Trufant is a phenomenal football player. What are your thoughts on him?
So it's interesting you say that. I'm only a casual college football fan. So a lot of the guys that are on the Falcons, I can't give you much of a college perspective unless I go back and look up film on them. As far as Trufant goes, I'm with you. I think he is a phenomenal player. It's just he got hurt and his production was missed. But yes, I do think he is an excellent player, and I think, you know, him being healthy again with some of the other additions we made on the defense will definitely help him step up his game.
All right, Rob, I buried the lead. I was a terrible host. The most important story of the week. How about that dude who bought the Sammy Watkins jersey a half hour before they announced
it? Oh, my God. Did you see that? Awesome.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So he literally
posts on Twitter a picture of his new Sammy Watkins jersey, like celebrating that he bought it literally 30 minutes before the announcement of the trade. So people catch that. They start spreading it around. Yeah. Man, is that not, like, exactly exemplifying what being a Bills fan is like?
Oh, dude, that's so – in Buffalo, we have a term about, like, things like that being Billsy. That's so typical Billsy, it's ridiculous.
Oh, man. All right, so tell me about your Bills through week one of the preseason.
Okay, so week one, I mean, really all that matters, you know, you're looking at, like, the first quarter. I loved the first team defense and the first team offense. I thought it was real kind of good to see. Shady McCoy obviously didn't play because, you know, he's big time. He don't need to play in the first preseason game. So Jonathan Williams, the guy who's going to be the backup running back replacing Mike Gillisley, who the Patriots signed as a restricted free agent, ended up being the starting running back for the first couple drives. And he played really well. I liked him coming out of college. He played in the SEC. So MJ and James maybe at least a little familiar with him. He played at Arkansas. He got injured his senior year. So he kind of fell in the draft, and the Bills took him. He had 4 carries for 39 yards, which I love to see. He looks like he's fitting in well into the offense. And it wasn't like he had one long run. Like, everything was, you know, 8, 9, 10-yard carries. I felt like the defense played well. The Bills, obviously, are a young team, and no one's really expecting too much from them, and I understand that. But I think that they may be a frisky team that may play well this year. I don't think they're making the playoffs, but I think, you know, a lot of people think they're going to have a top 5 pick. I think they're going to be more of like a 7-9, you know, team, maybe 8-8, you know, with a future to build on. So I think that's good. Some things that have happened since then. Peterman, who was a 5th round pick by the Bills during the draft this year, he played well. He threw a touchdown pass. And now today in practice, he jumped up. He's playing with the 2s. It looks like TJ Yates, who they had tabbed as their backup quarterback, has been demoted, which I like to see. I think that's good. I think if the Bills are real serious about if they are quote unquote tanking, you may see Peterman as starting quarterback after the bye week. I don't think they'll do that, but, you know, something to kind of watch. But I think this offense is going to be better than people think. You know, the last 2 years, it doesn't seem like it, but the Bills had the 10th ranked offense and the 12th ranked offense. And last year they did that with no Sammy Watkins. You know, he only played a couple games. And so it was Robert Woods, Marquise Goodwin, who is a track star. He's not a football player. I mean, he plays football, but, and, you know, a couple other guys who, you know, Greg Salas, who I don't even think he's in the league anymore. You know, they have better weapons this year. So it'll be, you know, they're a run first team and they have all those positions handled. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm not expecting great things from the Bills this year. But, you know, the preseason game at least kind of gave us a little bit of hope that, hey, we might not be a complete dumpster fire, even though we traded our number one wide receiver and number one cornerback.
Should you also consider trading your number one running back?
I don't think there's really, even though he's a special, special player, I don't think there's really too much of a market for a 29-year-old running back.
Yeah, I saw a tweet go out from friend of the show, Matt Williamson, kind of musing about that idea, sort of based on these trades, on all these picks that you're picking up, and the fact that the team does seem to be in a bit of a rebuild. I mean, LeSean McCoy, you know, in my opinion, until proven otherwise, is an excellent running back. And so he kind of mused the idea of LeSean McCoy and potentially even Tyrod Taylor contributing to just a total teardown sort of rebuild of this team. Sounds like you're not quite ready to go that far.
Yeah, no. I mean, they signed Anquan Boldin last week. So, you know, say what you want. But last year, you know, I just mentioned the receivers who they had last year. This year, it's Jordan Matthews, Anquan Boldin, Zay Jones, who's a second-round pick who's played pretty well in preseason. And they have more depth. They got Andre Roberts, they got Rob Streeter from Oakland. And, you know, they're deeper at wide receiver than they were last year. And I think if you're going to take Watkins out of the equation last year because he played injured in a couple games and that was it, they have more talent at wide receiver than last year. So I don't think that the offense is going to take really a step back. I don't think the team's going to take a step back. I think they're 7-9, 8-18. They finished 6-10 last year. I think that with what they have, I think the coaching is going to be better because my personal opinion is Rex Ryan is a god-awful NFL football coach. Even with a rookie coach this year, I think they're still, you know, the only thing that scares me is the schedule is a lot harder than last year. But I don't think they're a 3-13, 4-12 team that's trying to just completely tank. I think, you know, they still want to be a competitive football team. They just want to complement that with building through the draft, and they saw an opportunity to, you know, add a bunch of draft picks this year.
I suppose that's reasonable until we find out tomorrow that Pod Vader decided he likes you and then ACLs start popping left and right.
Oh, man.
All right. All right, so that's going to be the point where we wrap up on that positive note. Before we go, though, I want to remind you that we are taking place in the two pods a day throughout the month of August. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be – us and a lot of other independent podcasts are going to be asking everybody to listen to two new podcasts every day. It's a – especially for, you know, the podcast community, this is how shows grow. This is how people become aware of things. And so we definitely want to be involved in that. It's something that's important just to us for the podcast, for the community, for the growth. And if you're anything like me, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have a long commute to work every day and back. So I'm definitely all in on this. For me, it's probably two podcasts 5 days a week since that's when my commute is. But we really encourage you to listen more, listen indie. So again, you can look for the hashtag two pods a day on Twitter and Facebook. And hopefully we help you find something interesting you haven't been listening to. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. MJ, if people want to hear more of your thoughts, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at The Angry Heretic. And if you want to find me, it's one of these days we'll have to talk about it. It's a real interesting story behind that name. really, James, really. But yes, The Angry Heretic is my Twitter handle. You'll find me on there talking about anything from sports to politics to anime to science fiction and comic books.
Awesome. You're the man, MJ. What about you, Rob?
You can find me at Buffalo_Sauced. And really, it's just going to be Buffalo Bills football and any drunk musings that I have.
All right, James, how about you?
I actually don't even have a Twitter presence, but if fans want to get at me, you can hit our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com, drop an email, address it to me. It eventually gets to me, and you can hear my thoughts every Thursday on that podcast as well.
Oh man, stealing my end of show promo thunder. That's cold, James. That's cold. All right. Sorry. You can follow you can follow me at Koreis. That's at KOREIS. Follow the show, especially if you want to just hit all of us. That's at NFU Podcast. Like James said, we've got a pretty good website filled with a lot of, let's call it eclectic content. That's nextfanup.wordpress.com. You can also email us, and it sounds like you want to reach James because he lives in a cave. That's what you got to do. That's going to be nextfanup@gmail.com. Please like, share the show. We're about to roll into the full season mode, so if you know anybody who's interested in football, encourage them to give it a listen. We're still looking for a couple of super fans for a few positions, but we're pretty close to a full roster. As always, if you enjoyed what you heard, also give us a review on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Take a breath after the long spiel. We're going to turn over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.